morning, everyone, and welcome to Coffee with the Coder for Monday, March 13th, 2017. We are happy to have you join us for your coffee break this morning. We've got some wonderful questions. I'm excited to share them with Paula this morning. Good morning, Paula.
Good morning. Hope everyone's doing well this morning.
Yes, me too. I've got my coffee. I think you probably have your tea. So I'll take a couple minutes. Maybe 10 minutes. And I will record this so that you can review it again later in case you didn't get all the details you were listening for. But we got some really good questions to start off with today. And they're mostly in the inpatient rehab setting at this point because there's a lot of questions coming in from inpatient rehab. So let's just jump right in and get to the first question. So, Paula, this one says, for an IRF encounter on the UB04 after a patient had a CABG, CAD is technically still present. I'm not sure why an aftercare code is used.
Okay. Well, let me talk through this one for just a second. Okay, so the principal actually, and we're talking about the UB04, would be the aftercare, even though that condition still exists. You know, perhaps what you need to think about, and let me read through to you the ICD-10 guidelines related to aftercare. It says, aftercare visit codes cover situations when the initial treatment of the disease has been performed and the patient requires continued care during the healing or recovery phase, or for the long-term consequences of the disease. The aftercare Z code should not be used if the treatment is directed at a current acute disease. The diagnosis code is to be used in these cases. Exceptions to this rule are codes Z51.0 for encounter for antineoplastic radiation therapy and Z51.1 encounter for antineoplastic chemotherapy and immunotherapy. These codes are first listed, followed by the diagnosis code when a patient's encounter is solely for receiving those therapies. If the reason for the encounter is more than one type of antineoplastic therapy, it gives you the code Z51.0 and Z51.1 may be assigned together. It also goes on to say the aftercare codes are generally first listed to explain the specific reason for the encounter, and the principal diagnosis is defined as that condition established after study to be chiefly responsible for occasioning admission of the patient to the hospital for care. So this is Paula right here. So although the CAD caused the need for the CABG, the aftercare following the CABG is the reason for the rehab according to the principal diagnosis selection guidelines. So my interpretation here is that, you know, perhaps the CAD was repaired in that specific vessel and the focus of care becomes the aftercare, not on the acute care for that CAD. The CAD would, however, still be listed as your etiologic diagnosis on the IRF-PI. So I want to make sure that I'm clear, the IRF-PI versus the UB04. The UB04, if the patient had that surgical event, the CABG, then it would be the aftercare code for the surgery. And then the etiologic diagnosis would still be the CAD, which caused the need for the CABG and then, of course, the need for the surgery and rehab. Excuse me, the need for the surgery and, I'm sorry, the need for the rehab. So, Pam, did we have another question?
Yes, we do, and I just want to thank you about that because it sounds like, I mean, I'm not a coder, and so some of the folks listening in may not be coders either, but it sounds like it's really important to pay attention to guidelines everywhere because yes. What I'm hearing you say is that this particular thing is different on UB than it is on IRF-PI.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Yes, we've got another really good question. Maybe you'll have time to poke in a third one today. So this question is also from the IRF setting, and this person, Angie, I'm sorry, I didn't tell you that the first question. I forgot to write the name down. I'm so sorry, whoever you asked that question. I'll go back and find your name. Angie asks, I have a question for you in regard to wound care and for wound dehiscence from a wound that was present on admission. When we code it for admission, we would code the wound dehiscence with an A qualifier, T81.31XA. Now, on discharge, would we change the qualifier to a D, T81.31XA? The patient received active treatment during their stay in rehab. This is a comorbid or secondary diagnosis.
Okay. There's a lot of questions, particularly in the Earth setting, for when we report the A versus, the seventh character A versus the seventh character D. So if it is a new problem, okay, and the patient's initial treatment for it was in the acute care hospital or wherever that initial care happened, but the reason for admission to the rehab facility, and if we're talking about the IRF-PI, if that diagnosis, the dehiscence, was the etiologic diagnosis, it would be reported with a seventh character of A. However, if it did not occur in the rehab setting, meaning it occurred before they came, and it was listed as a comorbid condition, it would be listed with a seventh character of D. Now, if you're reporting this on the UBO for claim form, all of them would be, in most occasions, would be in the scenario, I should clarify, the scenario that you stated, because you could have some different seventh characters, but in the scenario you stated for the UBO4, that seventh character would be a D. So that means subsequent encounter. And then, but remember, if it's an etiologic diagnosis, that would be an A. So I know there's some confusion around this. I know we've had these questions several times related to the seventh character A's and D's. So keep sending them in because I want to make sure that all of you understand when to use that seventh character A versus when to use that seventh character D. Pam, I think we also have a third question.
Yes, we do. There's time for another one. Yay. And this one is from someone like me who's not a coder. Okay. Jennifer has another question from the IRF setting, and she says, I have a quick question about pro-fee E&M coding on rehab charts and how you decide the high, moderate, and low complexity in the medical decision-making section. Oh, that's a big one. Are there certain things to be looking for to decide on the risk level that we should be signing? Any advice on E&M coding for rehab would be very helpful.
Okay. Actually, Pam, this question is not only rehab. This question is for any physician provider office or physician that, and actually I should say physician or other provider who reports evaluation and management services. So it's very difficult to determine, and E&M coding, although it is challenging, I guess, at some times, particularly when you're not a coder, number one, and you're learning how to assign those evaluation and management codes or how to maybe audit those codes. CMS has published two sets of guidelines, the 1995 guidelines and the 1997 guidelines for evaluation and management services, and providers may use either set, whichever one is more beneficial to the visit. So most often with our electronic records these days, they're focused more on the 1997 guidelines for the specific specialty. But if you want to know more about the specific guidelines, please go to the CMS website, download a copy of those documentation guidelines. You can just search 1995 or 1997 evaluation management, and it will pop up real quickly, and you can download those guidelines and see the difference. We also have courses on AQIQ specific to E&M coding, E&M documentation, E&M auditing, and we have an audit tool that's available based on your specialty or the guidelines that you choose. But since you're not a coder, I'm going to just kind of back up to this and say, there are multiple components in making the selection of your E&M code. You've got your history, your examination, and your medical decision-making component. Now, I understand the question that you're asking is specifically related to the medical decision-making component. And in the CMS E&M documentation guidelines, regardless of if you use 95 or 97, the way that you calculate the medical decision-making is the same. And for that third component, there are three components that make up the medical decision-making. But for that third component, the risk level, that should really come from the CMS table of risk, which is in those documentation guidelines. All three components, you're looking at the number of diagnoses or treatment options. That's the first component. The second component is you're looking at the amount of complexity or data that the physician has reviewed or evaluated. And then the third component is the risk of complications or mortality. One of the things that happens when I'm looking and auditing medical records is oftentimes because CMS published that table of risk, providers will go to that table of risk and select the medical decision-making component based on just the table of risk without consideration of the number of diagnoses or treatment options or the amount of data that is reviewed. And it's very important that you look at all three of those things because when you're calculating it, you have to look at, okay, you know, how many diagnoses or treatment options, what was the amount of data that was reviewed, looking at test results and things like that, as well as what is the level of risk of complications or mortality, which is included in the table. And then you, I guess the best way to say that is it would be the table uses an average, if you will, and you figure out two of those three components will determine your level of medical decision making. But remember, you can't select your total E&M code based on the level of medical decision making alone. You also have to look at that level of history and the level of examination. So I know that was a long answer to a short question, and there's so much more you could delve into on this particular question, but please do visit us on AQIQ and review those E&M courses and perhaps look at the audit tool, and hopefully it will be beneficial for you because it's something that is difficult to describe in a 10-minute period, and we had far less than that. So thank you for your questions today. I appreciate them. Pam?
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that very much. And I will say that I have listened to those E&M courses, and after listening to them a number of times, it actually made it much more clear to me. When you're just, like said, answering it in a couple of minutes, there may still be questions. So we invite your questions at aq-iq.com. There's a link to Coffee with Decoder where you can listen to all the previous episodes, or you can post in your question for us to address. Make sure that your question has to be at least 48 hours in advance because some of them actually require looking up and some research. So we don't mind answering questions that need research, but we require a little time. We can't do it off the top of our head because although Paula is brilliant, she doesn't have it all in her head. She just has to look up them.
So thanks, Pam. And actually, our whole team gets in on these, so that's good to know as well.
Yes, you do have a good support team there, too. And thanks so much for joining us. I'm going to put this one in the books, and we will look for you on Monday, March the 27th.
Go to smarter.aq-iq.com and click register to sign up for your free account, which includes our AQIQ Make My Revenue Smarter newsletter.